It is our great pleasure to be with Dr. Alan Wallace, Bill Russell, and I, Paula. I really like being able to get up in the morning and smile to myself and say, this is going to be a good day. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but this is going to be a good day. There'll be some obstacles. How do you, when you are working with people, give them that sense of, this is going to be a good day? How does one embody that notion of being positive instead of negative? Let's see. The species might go extinct, or?
For the moment, what we attend to is reality. I'll come back to William James's koan. If we get mired down in all of the dire warnings, the tragedies, the disasters, the pending disasters, then that will simply pull us down. And it may actually stifle our imagination, our vision. So without being foolish in the sense of ignoring the problems that are there, where my heart gravitates, where my mind gravitates, my imagination gravitates, is what are the possibilities? What is a vision of my own flourishing? Regardless of whatever impact I can have on the world or however the world turns out, can I envision flourishing in a world that is so much beyond my control? And my answer is yes, I can. And so sharing that, I do love engaging with people, and I do so almost in a homogeneous way, especially in terms of public activities. The material that I discuss, I love, and it inspires me and fills me with joy. And when I engage with other people who are open, interested, that love just flows out. And so when I'm with people that I feel deeply connected with, where love, affection, a sense of caring flows unimpededly, and I'm talking about things that I love, that inspire, that's easy. All goes well.
What is hard is when all does not go well. How do we speak to our young people to give them a sense of hope? Or is that too confining a word, hope?
We do need hope. Of course we need hope. It goes hand in hand with vision and possibilities. And frankly, in my engagement with young people, especially during 4 years when I was teaching many undergraduate courses at the University of California, Santa Barbara, I found that they didn't need much prodding. They were not yet in the ruts. They were not yet entrenched in trying to establish themselves as being this as opposed to that, and climbing some pre-established ladder at the top of which there was going to be some symbol of success.
Not success itself.
No, a symbol of success. Grab onto that and close your eyes and hope it's good. No, I found so many young people, and I continue to do so, because I still engage a lot in conferences, in seminars, in meditation retreats, and so forth. I meet with young people a lot, and frankly, I find them inspiring. That so many of these bright young people in their 20s, their early 30s, even late teens, they're as intelligent as anybody else. You don't get more intelligent as you get older. They don't have the experience yet. But I sense a light in their eyes and a willingness to open up and to explore things that even my generation has not explored, let alone past generations. I think there's a lot of hope there. And so what can we offer them? Options. Options and more options. Let them find their own way, but provide them with alternatives. Provide them with unexplored territories, a new world of engaging with ancient worlds in a fresh and unprecedented way. Let them engage and explore in the inner world of their own internal resources and tap into those in ways that they've never seen before. Provide them with the opportunity for inspiration, and they will leap to it.
I want to go one other place, and this has to do with credibility. To me, I'm like a lot of people who was trained in the West and, you know, in the sciences and in the skepticism and all that go with that. And I had not, until reading and your work and listening to you, it had not occurred to me that meditation could be a research agenda. More substantively, that it could be a scientific research agenda. It's easy to make general statements. We tend to credit, from a skeptical standpoint, those things that get embossed with science. And the notion that what the meditation tradition, the traditions coming out of the East, could in fact lead us to a bright, new, shiny way of doing substantive and important scientific research, to me, was extraordinary.
I'd be willing to dedicate most of the rest of my life to that vision right there. William James is one of my heroes, and when he, as one of the great pioneers of psychology in the Western Hemisphere, when he envisioned this fresh new scientific discipline of studying the mind, he envisioned a triadic approach, studying the mind indirectly by way of its behavioral expressions, studying the mind indirectly by studying its neural causes, and first, foremost, and always, studying the mind directly by way of introspection. And he was not naive. He recognized that it's full of potholes and minefields and so forth, but he offered a vision that introspection, the direct observation of one's own mental states, which is exactly one of the things done in meditation, could be actually the spearhead, the central thrust of this great new scientific study of a natural phenomenon, the mind. We've done tremendous work, we, that is, scientists, have done tremendous work studying the mind by way of behavior, tremendous work, more and more, by studying the mind indirectly by way of the brain. We've made virtually no progress since time of William James, of studying the mind directly by means of immediate observation, introspection, meditation. Maybe the time is ripe now, that we don't have to reinvent that wheel. We don't have to do this as if nobody's else never thought of this before, but tap into these great contemplative traditions, such as Buddhism, provide the missing link, and give some depth to this notion of what it means to be human and the very nature of consciousness itself.
And that will be a revolution.
Truly a revolution, hopefully a true renaissance.
We thank you, Alan Wallace.
You're welcome, Paula, and to you both.
Alan Wallace has done us all an immense service in writing Genuine Happiness, Meditation as the Path to Fulfillment, and his other stimulating and enlightening books. We thank him for giving all of us access to authentic, genuine happiness. We also thank the Loesling Institute and our mutual friend, the remarkable Dr. Paul Ekman, for bringing us all together. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.